All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Pastor Sean Harris from Berean Baptist Church, and at the Berean Mic, we've got a new guest, and Keith Howard. Now, Keith, you're a political activist for all practical purposes in Cumberland County. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement.
Sure, and you pay attention to what's going on in the nation at the federal level and at the state level?
Yes, sir.
You're an informed citizen?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. And David, our youth pastor, did a podcast last week on Romney's comment about the 47%.
Right.
And you didn't quite agree with David. Is that fair?
That's a fair statement.
Yeah. And so what we're going to do this morning, this afternoon rather, is we're just going to, in a moment, watch the clip one more time, refresh your minds. We'll let you as the listener listen to it for yourself. And then we'll turn the mic back on and we're going to have a discussion as to why are the differences and what's the controversy about and what are the different perspectives. I think this is going to be helpful for our listeners.
Yes, sir.
There's two sides to every issue, three sides, four sides. And one thing we definitely need is an informed voter.
Yes, sir. That's exactly
absolutely
right.
Exactly.
Everyone agrees with that.
Yes, sir.
I was watching the news yesterday. I was quite entertained as people were being asked what they thought about Obama's pick for as Paul Ryan as vice president. And most people said, yeah, I think Obama did a good job when he picked Paul Ryan for his vice president.
Obama?
Yeah. And nobody picked up on the fact that they were talking about President Obama. And that's a problem.
Yeah, definitely a problem.
Because yes. These people get to
yes.
vote.
Yes. It's interesting. We found that out in 2010 that there were so few voters in 2010 that with the local elections that it played an important part, just as well as your presidential elections, that your local elections are just as important as your general presidential elections because
sure.
they have a direct effect on everyday life,
mm-hmm.
you know, more than your presidential
sure elections. Sure they do, right.
They
yeah.
directly affect you.
Board of education positions.
Education,
yeah.
Your day-to-day, you
right.
get up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you shower and shave. In 2010, in your general elections more than your presidential election. So, yes, you're exactly right. We need to be more informed. And,
yeah.
and thank you very much.
So hopefully these podcasts are helping a few more people get more informed.
Yes.
Okay, at this time we're going to turn the mic off. We're going to let you listen to Mitt Romney. He is addressing, it looks like, supporters. There's a video. It's a hidden camera video of sorts in the sense that Romney doesn't know that he's being recorded, and he's not speaking in directly into a microphone per se, and we'll let you listen to this 1 minute clip, and then we'll turn the mic back on and we'll get into our discussion.
There are 47% of the people who vote for the president no matter what. All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they are entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. But that's an entitlement, and the government should give it to them. And they will vote for this president no matter what. And the president starts off with 48, 49, 43. He starts off with a huge number. These are people who pay no income tax. 47% of Americans pay no income tax. So our message of low taxes doesn't connect. And you'll be out there talking about tax cuts for the rich. I mean, that's what they sell every 4 years. And so my job is not to worry about those people. I'll never convince them. They should take personal responsibility and care for their lives. What I have to do is convince the 5 to 10% in the center that are independent, that are thoughtful, that look at voting one way or the other, depending upon, in some cases, emotion, whether they like the guy or not.
Well, that was the clip, and so since Keith had the issue with the original podcast, I want to direct my first question to him. Keith, talk to us about what you found issue, what you found offensive, or what's the disagreement you have with David's rendition or David's conversation or commentary?
That the 47% of the people that he was talking about are dependent upon healthcare, food, government for healthcare, food, and housing. When you look at the 47%, that's a broad-based statement that captures a lot of people. And in that, we're talking about a broad base of U.S. soldiers in combat, that don't pay taxes, firefighters, as well as U.S. Air Force staff sergeants, steel workers, security guards, high school teachers, police officers, and even clergy members that fall into that category. When you break that down.
Well, I wish I fell in that category. I don't know what clergyman you're talking about, but I pay a ton of taxes.
When we look at that, we look at U.S. soldiers in combat. U.S. soldiers in combat pay while they're in the combat zone on subject to federal tax.
Right.
Right. You have U.S. Army staff sergeants. There are staff sergeant military police, MPs, with 8 years of service who earn a base pay of $34,723. With a spouse earning $10,000 through part-time work and with at least two kids. Steel workers making an average of at least $45,000 with a stay-at-home mom or spouse with two kids.
Mm-hmm. And so you're saying, Keith, that those people are working, they're not dependent on the government, and they don't pay taxes.
And they don't pay taxes. So do you see how this is capturing a particular type? Now, as well as security guards. Security guard making an average wage of $23,900, married with a bank teller making an average wage of $24,500 with three kids. A high school teacher making an average wage of $54,000, who is the primary source of income and has at least three kids. You have a police officer, a New Mexico patrolman with a starting salary of $39,000, married to a part-time child care worker with at least two kids. Then you have a clergyman.
So you've got a lot of examples of people who are working.
Yeah.
So what do you think, David?
Yeah.
Well, I think I will concede the fact that his use of the 47% was probably not accurate in the sense of how he phrased it. Because I don't think he was referring to the people that you're listening. So I think he was a little bit clumsy in his use of the 47%, because I think we've got a group. There are 47%, like you said, that don't pay taxes, and there are also a large number of Americans that are dependent upon government, and that's not one group, but there's definitely some overlap in that group, I think. And so the percentage of people on government dependency and people that pay no taxes, I think, are very similar in numbers. And so I think his delivery of the 47% was not very accurate, but I think his overall premise that there is a large percentage of America that, because of their dependence on government, automatically have an allegiance to the current administration, I think, is accurate.
So what do you think about that, Keith? Do you think that there are people that, because they receive a consistent check from the government, are going to vote for the president without regard to anything else, without regard to the other issues that they should perhaps consider, like Planned Parenthood or same-sex marriage or any of the foreign policy? Do you think that their allegiance to the government providing them a check influences how they vote?
Not at all. Not at all. I think that's a misstatement, because a government check or some type of entitlement, for even myself, I'm retired, I'm a disabled veteran,
mm-hmm.
who gets a VA government check every month. And that government check that I get every month has no bearing, because I've injured in Iraq, has no bearing on my moral values that I have and how it affects me with my family and my decision that I make. So, with that being said, no, not at all. And overall, I don't think that would be the case in point. And most people who don't pay federal tax will either pay, you're going to pay either your state sales tax or income, if not federal income tax, you're going to pay your other taxes as well. So, just to look at the federal income tax, you know, that's neither here nor there. So you're paying tax along the way. You just might not pay your federal tax.
Keith, you said it doesn't influence you.
Exactly.
Right. Do you think that there's any percentage that it influences?
Well, overall, we can always look at that 3-5%. You know, we know we have a problem. I think the Romney statement, there's an issue. part of it is true. We do have an issue.
All right, what's the issue? In your mind, what is the issue in America right now?
I think there is an issue. Part of that percentage of what he said, there is an issue. Now, we do have fraud. We do have a percentage of fraud. Mm-hmm. Let's be totally honest. We do have fraud. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's always going to be there. We need to fix that. It doesn't matter who's the president. We have fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So, to say that there is fraud, government fraud and waste, yes. But to say 47% are dependent or victims is a wrong statement.
Okay, so your issue is with the percentage?
It is with the whole statement all in all. Because
what if he would have said, what if the president, potential candidate would have said 10%? What would you have thought of him if he would have said 10% of the American population is dependent upon the government and they will vote with their pocketbooks based on the... What would you have thought of 10%, Keith?
That might have been a realistic... That might have been a closer realistic statement because we do have elderly. We do have people that are disabled, mentally or physically handicapped. That might have been a true statement to capture the true essence of our nation. That might have been true. But 47...
What do you think? You think 10% is a reasonable number, David? Or?
I just think it's... I think it's too low. I think based on what we see... in voting percentages, we've got two sides, 40-45% that are pretty much set in their ways. I don't think you see many people that go into two-year elections with Senate and local government or with presidential elections that are jumping from party to party based on candidates' platforms. I think what we've gotten to in the last, I don't know, maybe 12-15 years is partisanship. And I think a lot of voters are, and it's been that way a long time, I think, in a lot of different ways. Probably not to the percentage that it has been. But, you know, if you lived in the South in the 1860s, then you voted a certain way. And if you lived in the North in that time, you voted a certain way. And if you didn't, you were kind of out of the ordinary. And so I think we see a very similar thing today because I think what Romney said, like I said, he is speaking to a group of supporters,
right,
which I think, you know, it's just like we would do if we were in a closed room. We may say some things a little more off the cuff than we might in a major speech. I don't think he's necessarily cutting off half the country. But my point was that in talking to my supporters that I know are with me, I'm going to say we've got to get that 5 or 10% in the middle that haven't decided yet because that other 40% has decided. And I'm not going to be able to reach them no matter what my platform is. And like I said in the podcast, I think President Obama would say the same thing in that kind of context, in that he knows there is a certain percentage of voters that he will never get to vote for him. So why would I campaign hard for that group knowing that I'm never going to get their vote? That was really...
The essence of what you want to communicate.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I understand. And I understand what you're saying, David. But that wasn't the case in point with President Obama. And in 2008, he did go to the Republican states and campaign. Hence, why North Carolina went from a red to a blue state.
Now, what do you think is going to happen this year? You're an insider. What do you think is going to happen in November? Are we going to be a red state again, or are we going to continue to be a blue state? What's your gut reaction?
The political strategies that have been put forward at the Obama camp compared to the Romney camp, they have taken two different strategies. And as we know, one is taking a grassroots strategy, and that's the Obama camp, and the Romney camp is taking a direct TV ad campaign. So here in with North Carolina, President Obama has 51 offices here in the state of North Carolina where Governor Romney has 18. So they've taken two different strategies.
Okay.
So with that said, we'll see.
No, I don't want to we'll see. No, I mean, you got to ask a question.
I believe to be the grassroots efforts are always going to win.
So you think that...
I think it's going to stay blue. I do.
Right.
I truly believe. There's going to be pockets of red just like it was from before.
Right.
And the census, the 2010 census, as we know as... The 08 census showed that it changed. and there are pockets of blue and there's pockets of red. As we know, in the urban areas, it stayed blue.
Right.
And as we know, in the rural areas, it stays red.
Sure.
That's not going to change. As we know, Wilmington, Fayetteville, Raleigh, Greensboro, Charlotte will be blue, mm-hmm. and it will stay blue. Asheville and all of the rural areas will stay red. That's not going to change. The way it works, Democrats vote early, as the OSIV is. They always vote early and take advantage of early voting. Republicans always vote on Election Day.
Hmm.
That has been historic, and it's always going to be that way. Nothing's going to change.
Right.
So you think that we will remain a blue state?
Yes, sir.
Hmm.
And it's been historic the way things have been. Democrats take advantage of early voting. Republicans vote, don't take advantage of early voting, and take advantage of Election Day. That's why it was only blue by 14,000 votes.
Right.
Hmm.
And that's the way it's historically been.
So is there, in your view, is there any concern with the amount of money that the federal government is paying in entitlements? When should we become concerned about this? The national debt is $16 trillion. The annual deficit is $1 trillion. When do you think that we should become concerned about this?
It is a serious issue. It's been a serious issue for the last 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a serious issue for the last 12 years that we've been dealing with.
Right, but let's be fair. It's not as serious as it is now. Because 12 years ago, we didn't owe $16 trillion. I mean, 3 years ago, we didn't owe $16 trillion. We'd owe $10 trillion. So,
is it different if it's 8, 6? It's just... It's accelerated more now. It has accelerated since President Obama has taken office.
Well,
exactly right.
I'm not sure I understand your analogy, because if you came to me and said right now, I've got $30,000 on credit cards,
right.
I would say that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But if you came to me and said I have $70,000 on credit cards, I'd say that's out of control.
Exactly.
But you seem to suggest when I went $16 trillion, $10 trillion, you seem to suggest you went, if it's 6 or if it's 8 or it's 10, it's a big number, so what difference does it make? Is that really fair?
No, it's not fair. What I'm saying is, when you're looking at how much someone owes someone back money, right, David?
Mm-hmm.
When you know what I mean? When you owe someone money, it doesn't matter how much you owe. It depends on what course of action you're taking to correct something. As we know, back when we owed $6 trillion, there was no course of action to correct it. As now we owe $16 trillion, there's starting to become a course of action to correct
it. Okay, I don't see it. Tell me what the course of action is. I don't see where the course of action is to correct it.
The economy is recovering. It's at a slower rate. We have partly handled some of China as far as in the fair trade inequities that have been going on, as far as we haven't taken care of the financial inequities that they are doing. You know, they're controlling the monetary funds. But we're getting a lot of the jobs that were overseas, they're coming back.
And you think they are coming back?
Yeah, they're slowly but surely coming back. Actually, they're coming back into the state of Ohio manufacturing. And that's what's outstanding. A lot of the jobs are coming, manufacturing jobs are coming back to the state of Ohio. And we've actually put back 142,000 jobs in the state of Ohio. That's cool. That's what's outstanding.
Well, I don't see it.
Can I just give you? I want to give you some research that I did today and
yes,
allow you a chance to respond. Some index I looked up today: 63.7 million Americans, or about 1 in 5, is receiving direct government support from Social Security, welfare, or Pell grants, and that's the highest level ever. Wall Street Journal found in 2011, 49% of Americans lived in a household where at least one member of a family received a government benefit. Government dependency is jumping for the fourth year in a row, and the index has risen more than 31% in that time. And 70.5% of federal spending goes to dependency-creating programs.
All right, say that percentage again, because our listeners can't see what you're seeing.
Yeah.
So let's be clear. What percentage?
70.5% of federal spending, and that's cited in from the Heritage Foundation, goes to dependency-creating programs. We're spending more on dependency-creating programs while an ever-shrinking number of taxpayers are paying for them.
So what are we going to do? What's the future going to come? What's the solution? What do you think Obama will do in his second term to fix this?
Part of it is changing the tax code. As we know for a fact, part of the tax, we know the tax code is broken. One of the problems is one of the presidential candidates is an expert in maneuvering his money out of it. So we know that the same thing.
Well, you're making reference, let's be clear to the listener, you're making reference to Romney.
To Romney.
And you're saying he doesn't pay enough taxes.
Exactly.
All right, now, so let's make sure the listener understands. Last year, 2011, he paid $1.97 million in federal taxes.
He paid 13 or 14%.
Right. You can do percent if you want, yes. But let's make sure they understand what the number is.
Yes.
It's almost $2 million. That's one citizen.
One citizen. But on how much money did he make? And part of that money...
Okay, go ahead.
And part of that money was sheltered offshore into a blind trust fund, which was entered into a Bermuda blind trust fund, which was in turn invested in companies into Iran.
So your contention is he's not paying enough.
He's never paying enough. That's why the
budget... What would enough be?
Well, we want to know, we should also... The plan is to make sure that the millionaires are paying a higher percentage.
Okay, well, how much?
Of course, they should be paying at least 30-40%, as we know, for a fact.
Well, I think it's a difficult analogy to make with a man like Governor Romney, in that he's not like us. You know, he doesn't get paychecks. He doesn't get income like we do. He has
investments.
Granted, he's got a lot of investments. He's a very rich man. He comes from money, corporate money, all that stuff. But hasn't he already paid taxes on his corporate earnings? Aren't those taxes taxed at 35% when he earns them corporately? Why does he have to pay taxes again on his investments? If any of us were in the same position, I think we would do the same thing.
As a business owner, I find that to be ludicrous. I think that sheltering, and that's a corporate tax shelter, and of course, he's asking for more money to be sheltered for the major corporations, as well as middle class pay more money. And that's not fair. That is nowhere near fair. And in no sense of the word.
So that's really the divide then, isn't it? We've just kind of, in my view, we've just identified Romney's, there's 47% of the population that no matter what I say, they're not going to vote for me. Isn't that pretty much what he's saying?
You can sum that up that way, yes.
I mean,
yes.
Is that wrong, that the way
no.
I summed it up?
No, it's not wrong. And if you look at it, you know, you could say that. You could say that.
So his remark was, I've got to focus on the 5% that are really going to decide the election.
Yeah, but if you're saying, he's saying they don't pay payroll taxes, and that's the wrong statement. I mean, income tax. So that's
yeah,
the wrong statement.
But we know that 47% don't pay federal income tax. That is a true number.
That's not a correct statement.
Okay, well, how should the statement be made then?
It should have been made to where they say the 47% should have captured a smaller percentage. Just like we talked about the U.S. soldiers that are in combat. Mm-hmm. Just like the firefighters or the school teachers.
All right, but in the end, they pay taxes on a monthly basis, but then when they file for their return, Keith, they get it all back.
Yeah.
So right now, almost half the citizens in the United States that are taxpayers don't pay federal taxes, but they receive all the same benefits.
I didn't understand this.
All right, I'm saying that the way our current tax system is set up.
Yeah, the tax code system.
The clergy that you made reference to,
right.
That these individuals, that on a monthly basis, they do have taxes withdrawn from their paycheck.
Yes, sir.
But when they file at the end of the year, their 1040,
right.
They normally will get back, if they fall under that income level,
exactly.
They'll get every penny back that they paid in taxes.
Yes, sir.
So the way our current tax system is set up, 50%, almost 50%, 47, 48%, do not actually contribute to the federal income tax problem that we have.
Yes, sir.
And your contention is that the solution to that problem is to tax the wealthier more so that they don't have to pay.
No, it's to change the tax code system altogether.
Okay, so tell us how you would change the tax code system.
Well, we know it's been broke, David, for a long time.
I would totally agree with you. Absolutely.
It's been broke.
We can agree wholeheartedly on
and,
that.
And that's a bipartisan problem. Mm-hmm. And I think that with Ryan and some very intelligent Republicans and Democrats, I think they have some great ideas to come up with a plan to actually fix our tax code.
Which but in our video clip, guys, let's focus on the thing. Romney specifically said that those people who don't pay taxes are never going to vote for someone who wants them to make them start paying taxes.
Yeah, like I said, I will concede the fact that the 47% number, in the way that he phrased it, is not accurate.
Yeah,
like I said,
right. I don't agree with that.
I'm pretty sure that he was not referring to U.S. soldiers in combat at that. But the way he phrased it was clumsy enough to allow that the facts to come in and get that. So,
exactly.
You guys have probably seen the recent video they put out of the president in 1998 when he was a state senator. I've got a quote from that.
Yeah.
And he says, and granted, it's 14 years ago, okay, so I'm not going to hold it up as his current thinking, but he did say it. It says, what I think will re-engage people in politics is if we're doing significant, serious policy work around what I will label the working poor. Although my definition of the working poor is not simply folks making minimum wage, but it's also families of four who are making $30,000 a year. They're struggling. And to the extent that we are doing research, figuring out what kinds of government action would successfully make their lives better, we are then putting together a potential majority coalition to move those agendas forward. And it just sounds like if I can get these people on my dole, they'll be with us for life. That's kind of the gist that I get from that statement.
You're talking about back in
98.
That he has a plan whereby more people receive government assistance in the form of food stamps, disability, things of that nature, and as such become loyal supporters to that political agenda.
And he's basically saying, if I can get that to 51%, I can get everything done. Yeah.
So I guess what I'm trying to figure out is when we say that Romney at $2 million is not enough because that's only 14%, what are we going to do with the 50% that don't pay anything? When do they need to start paying something? Because they're part of the nation. They get benefits. They enjoy the freedom. And it's almost like if you can just imagine a toll road, Keith, and if you have a Beamer or a Mercedes, then the toll is $10. But if you have a Ford Pinto, then the toll is $1. Or you could do it a different way.
So you're saying the class of car changes everything.
Yeah, or for the tax. Or you could say, for example, that if you're a male, it costs you $3 to ride down this road. But if you're a female, it's free. Because I'm trying to figure out when will the other half that's not paying be required to do something?
Well, I'll just say this is that we know the tax code needs to be fixed. I think the wealthy need to pay more. We know that the system is broke. The tax code system is broke. We do have people that are defrauding the government. And that's totally true.
All right, let me ask you a different way then. Do we have able-bodied people at home that are ripping the government off? Do we have people like that?
It's been that way for the longest. It's nothing new, Pastor.
Okay, so is it growing, though? Let me ask it that way. Has it grown over the last 4 years?
Well, let's be real. There are people that are on it because of situational, because the economy has tanked. We're in a recession. So part of that is no fault of their own. So we have to, let's look at life circumstances. Things, people have lost their jobs. Companies have folded. So people have lost their livelihood. People need assistance. I mean,
So, what,
I mean, you know,
do you think, for example, the 99 weeks, do you think that that's enough? Do you think it should go on more? Do you think that the 99 weeks of unemployment, I mean, that's almost 2 years. What do you think? I mean, where does it stop?
No, I don't. I mean, let me, as a business owner, I pay unemployment insurance, and it's killing me.
Right.
So, I mean, I have 9 employees that I'm paying unemployment insurance for, and it's been 2 years. It's killing me.
Right. So where does it stop?
Personally, I wish it would stop yesterday.
Okay.
Okay? But I understand life circumstances. You know, I've lost contracts. The people depending on me to, you know, to keep these contracts going. They don't have work. So they file unemployment. You know, the new contractor doesn't want to hire them.
Right.
So they're out of work. You know, they have kids and wives or husbands.
But Keith, where's their motivation to go get another job if they're still collecting from you from their previous job?
Some do, some don't. I wish I could go down there and shovel them out of their house, but I can't.
But what would shovel them out of their house is hunger.
You know, that's the Department of Labor gives them that opportunity.
I guess I'm struggling with the idea, Keith, that a man who pays $2 million didn't pay enough. And I'm trying to figure out, if you're a single citizen, I mean, you're one person, and you paid $2 million, and on top of that, by the way, he gave over $2 million away to charity.
Yeah, he paid.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
He pays
giving. Especially when you contrast it to the other candidates. I was very disappointed and some of the giving on the other candidates. You could tell that they're pretty cheap when it comes to what they give to...
Well, you got to think, Mitt Romney is the richest presidential candidate.
I'm just talking about time. Right, but I'm just talking about percentage.
In United States history.
Right, but I'm just talking by percentage.
Okay.
I mean, our vice president, our current vice president, is an incredibly tightwad of a guy. I mean, it's less than $1,000 is what he gave away with an income of almost $4,000. So, I mean, on the one hand, he's given away my government dollars, but on the other hand, his own personal contributions to charitable organizations. I mean, I feel like the guy's talking out of both sides of his mouth. Now, the president seems to be different.
Of course.
The president,
yeah.
But that's his VP. I mean, I'd like to put a little pressure on the guy and say, hey, can you cough up a little bit. You're embarrassing me when you...
Well, you know what? That's what we're talking about. Matthew, mm-hmm. Right? Matthew 5:42. You know.
Read it. Matthew 5:42. Read it for our audience.
To give him that ask of thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. To give. Love thy neighbor.
Sure.
To give.
Okay, so, but where's the balance, Keith, on how do I apply that verse if I don't have any money?
You give up yourself. You give up your time.
But let's talk about our federal government.
No. I'm just... Right. And we're talking about, you know... And you
personal guys, giving.
Personal giving.
Okay.
Right. You know, we're talking about personal giving. You know, and there's so many different ways we can give. We've had multiple sermons on that.
Okay.
Sure.
And the hardest thing we struggle with every day
is selfishness.
It's selflessness.
Sure.
Okay.
And that's something that I guess our VP needs to grow. He needs to learn to grow with, as well as everyone else.
I'm just trying to figure out if $2 million is not enough. I wonder if the tax would have been $4 million. I wonder if everyone would have said, now, man, that's $4 million is a lot of money. That's more than enough. Because even at $4 million, it would have only been 28%. So that still wouldn't have been, because some people are talking as high as, they want 40%.
Yeah, but you're looking at tax codes, you have 15%, 30%, right?
Sure. Okay, so, but let's just say, for example,
at a certain pay rate, at a certain wage earnings, you have a certain percentage, a certain age earnings. Now, of course, you can shelter that money to drop your wage earnings to become, to go into a certain tax bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Percentage. So,
but Keith, how much would have been enough?
All I'm saying is, whatever you make, you can shelter some. The tax code is broke. And whatever you make, you pay that percentage.
And that's but he did that.
We all know it's all broke. And we know it's broke.
But so. we talked about it in the podcast the other day. If you look at the stats, we had a top marginal rate in 1963 of 91%. And that brought in about the same amount of percentage of the GDP as in 1988 when it was 28%.
So it doesn't impact it, David.
So the idea in that article we were reading was, if I know you're going to take everything I have, well, I'm going to make sure that I... You know, the Thomas Sowell made a contention of, if I know you're going to take my cow, well, I'm just going to eat the cow now and not give it to you.
And what year were we talking about?
This was the graph that went across. It did tax rates from the 1930s all the way up to the present day, what the top marginal rate had been. And in 1963, it was 91%. Okay. 1988, it was 28%. In both of those years, it brought in 1963, it was 18.2% of the GDP. In 1988, it was 17.8%. And it's very rarely changed from 18 to 20%, no matter what the top marginal rate is.
Yeah, but you know those tax codes were built in, what, 1930?
Well, they've changed all throughout the years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but they're so dated. Mm-hmm. The tax codes are dated, which should have been changed in actually 1954. They should have been changed every 20 years. They should have been changed. Mm-hmm. They should have been upgraded, and they have never been. And as we know, that's an issue that we've,
I guess,
kicked the can down the street.
Yeah,
you know.
I guess the question that we need to decide, guys, is what is enough?
Enough for if I'm wealthy, to pay taxes.
If I'm wealthy, how much should I pay? Should I have to give up half of what I earn?
It should be equitable for everyone across the board, and that's to be fair.
Okay,
and
but what's fair
just for Mitt Romney, not just for anyone. And exactly right. Mitt Romney had a fair question. Everyone should pay their fair share of taxes.
Mm-hmm. What's fair, Keith?
Again, we should look at it equitable across the board, and that's the problem. And that's where Warren Buffett rule came into effect. The disparity comes from the top, not from the bottom. The disparity, the largest disparity in paying the taxes, the rate of taxes, was from the top, not bottom.
Well, of course it can't be unfair from the bottom. They're not paying anything.
Well, when you look at the percentage of people that were not paying, the largest percent of paying taxes, where the most people would pay, when you have a rate where you have, like Warren Buffett says, I pay less tax than my secretary, that's a problem. My rate on paying taxes is the same rate. I pay less in the rate than my secretary does. And this is Warren Buffett.
Wasn't that because he's doing the same thing that you're saying Romney's doing?
Yeah. He's like, there's a problem. The problem is the tax codes need to be changed. And they're saying that. We need to get higher rates. We need to change the tax codes. It's wrong. And all nine of them that came in here, the wealthiest men in the United States, came in and said that. They went to the Treasury Department and said, we need to change that.
Okay, but even if we change the tax codes and we tax the wealthiest like you're talking about.
Not tax them all. It just changed the whole tax code so everyone is equitably taxed at a right rate. Everyone.
Including
the burden on the people that are
Keith, paying. Including the bottom half that aren't paying anything?
Even them.
Do they need to start paying taxes?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Everyone. Everyone. We're going to have a percentage of people that are not going to pay because they cannot. And we have to factor that in. If not, if we don't...
Okay, but right now it's 47% don't pay taxes at the federal level. Is that too high of a number?
That's not a fair number.
Okay, what would be a fair number?
It's not a correct number, because they pay some form of taxes.
But we're talking about the federal, because that's where our $16 trillion debt is. So, yes, they pay at Walmart when they buy milk. Yes, they pay some type of county taxes for their dog or for their car or their property taxes. But that doesn't pay for the Army. That doesn't pay for those issues at the Department of Defense level, at the entitlement level.
Well, that's going to be an offset. So you could say that, and if you look at it realistically, let's say an offset would be 32%. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Instead no. Of 47%. You want to lower that.
You could lower the 32. As you raise the 47, you know, if you get a higher rate from your millionaires, you're going to drop that 47% down lower.
No, no, that's not the same. We've got to, you're talking about changing the tax codes. People who are making $50,000 a year, which is some of the numbers you quoted, they have to start paying taxes.
They will.
I don't see that anyone's talking about that. I don't think the president has any intent, any initiative, any plan to get those people paying taxes. All I hear about is the Buffett, the Buffett, the Buffett. Based on an analysis of taxing those wealthy people, we could probably bring in $100 billion a year in revenue. Now, our listener says $100 billion, that's an incredible amount of money. But wait a minute.
That's not a lot of money.
No, we're $1 trillion as a deficit. So even if I get the $100 billion from the wealthy by increasing the tax code in that sense, I'm still short $900 billion every single year.
That's why it's not a lot of money.
So where are we going to get the $900 billion from?
Well,
it's got to come from the 47% that aren't paying anything.
Well, and the spending's got to stop.
Well, the spending's got to stop.
Yeah. So we can actually try to make
right. it. Right, and part of that came is from funding two wars, as we know. Our biggest deficit.
But what did
our
you?
Biggest deficit came from funding two wars.
No, that's what is the number you just said shared with us? The 70%.
7.5% goes to dependency creating programs. Yeah.
Right, and you said entitlements. Part of that came from entitlements.
But 70%.
Yeah, but part of that deficit came from funding. You talking about $16 trillion? Or did you mention
$16 trillion?
$16 trillion. The majority of that came from some of that came from entitlements. Majority that came from funding two wars are simultaneously.
Most estimates, Keith, are that the wars are $3 trillion. So we're still way off. I mean, we've still got a lot of money that we've got to account for.
Annually or daily?
No, total. Total. Right. Because we were going to pay the Army, whether they're in Afghanistan or whether they're stateside, they're still getting paid. That's not going to change anything. There's a degree to which, whether they're in Iraq or Afghanistan, all the payroll, all that stuff is still happening. Whether they're deployed or whether they're here, they're still collecting a paycheck. If they're stateside, they're training. If they're downrange, they're shooting ammo. If they're stateside, they're shooting ammo. So everything isn't just the wars. I mean, what do you do with 2 years of unemployment? What do you do with the fact that at the current rate, more people are collecting food stamps than ever in the history of America? That's where this money's going.
Well, and it's needed. It is totally needed. I believe that President Obama is doing the right thing by affording them the opportunity for assistance. I totally believe it. I think he's guiding us in the right direction and ensuring that the people that need assistance are getting assistance. He will guide us out of this deficit with a sound financial plan. I believe that to be true. I do.
All right, David, do you believe that to be true?
I don't. I feel like we've gone in a tremendous amount of debt already, and the health care hasn't even kicked in yet, and I think that's going to cost a lot more than what he's telling us, and the spending and the chipping away at the budget doesn't seem to be matching up for me. I feel like it's just going to get farther and farther. You know, I'm no economist, so I can't speak in specifics, but just on my logic in my bank account, I know I've got to start taking in a little more than I'm spending or I'm going to be in trouble.
Okay. Well, we've got two converging opinions, and we're not going to solve anything today on this podcast, but we do want to give you something to think about when you're deciding what direction you're going to go. If you're a Democrat, I guess you're going to vote early, is what Keith tells us. If you're a Republican, you're going to wait to the last minute and vote on the day. In either case, we would just encourage you to make sure you vote.
Yes, sir.
That you're registered and that you cast a vote and that you make informed decisions and that you compare what you know to Scripture to what is the current state and make a wise, informed decision. Keith, do you have any closing comments?
No, I don't. But thank you for the opportunity. And we know for a fact that neither candidate can fix everything.
Sure.
Only God will.
Right.
Only God. Only God.
Okay, very good. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.